If I really believe that I'm doing this all for the right reasons, am I acting in a way that makes others see that I'm doing these for the right reasons and not because I just need to win?
Hello and welcome back to Leader Up, a podcast of Army Management Staff College. Leader Up is a professional conversation where we discuss a broad range of leadership and leader development topics with an emphasis on the Army civilian professional. I'm your host, David Howie. Hey, Leader Up audience, we have a guest today. This is Mr. Mike Edwards, and he's going to talk about a theory, and it's in a book, and I just read the book last week, and you may have heard of it. The book is called Crucial Conversations. It's highly recommended by a lot of very well-informed people, and we're going to talk about that because Mike Edwards is a trained instructor in crucial conversations. And so we're going to talk about that topic and kind of how it ties in with the rest of CES. So Mike, thank you so much for being with us today and being a guest on Leader Up.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. And so let's just start off a little bit about kind of your background, what you do in AMSC, how you got here, and maybe a little bit about what you did before that.
I did serve in uniform 23 years. First started out enlisted as a scout. Later, I got commissioned through ROTC, Green to Gold program, before it was Green to Gold program, became an armor officer, spent the last part of my career as a foreign area officer, traveling the world. But then I ended up here at Fort Leavenworth as an instructor. Wife decided, hey, I love the Fort Leavenworth area. Can we retire here? Sure. Stayed at the college there, teaching in the Department of Army Tactics as an instructor. Left briefly, went to USCIS, Citizenship and Immigration Services. And from there, that's where I get introduced to this theory that we're going to talk about today, crucial conversations. But then came back to Fort Leavenworth to become an instructor with the intermediate course, part of the civilian education system here at Army Management Staff College. Now I'm trying to get crucial conversations introduced into our curriculum, but it's already there in some shape or form, but I'd like to see some more of it added to the curriculum.
And I just found out that you and I are kindred spirits because I once upon a time was also an armor officer. And when I first got commissioned, I was studying to be a cavalry officer, but I got stuck in tank units after I finished the basic course. So we have some more stuff in common that we could talk about some other time. This idea of crucial conversations, what is a crucial conversation? What does that mean?
Okay, the Crucial Learning, which is the organization that one wrote the book, because there's multiple authors for the book, they have whittled it down to that it's a discussion between two or more people in which they hold one opposing opinions about high stakes and where the emotions run strong. I know that's one of the questions you want to get to is what are those main three components? And that's really the big three in that definition that they offer is, opposing opinions, strong emotions, high stakes. I'll give you a good example of talking about that is, I'm sure many of us have been in one of those meetings where the boss looks at us and says, you have to get this done by this date. And we're looking at him like, we've never done it that quickly. And all of a sudden it's, opposing opinions, boss wants it done this soon, and you don't think it can happen. Strong emotions, jobs on the line, and then there's high stakes, and we see it. So, yeah, that's what a crucial conversation is.
Think about this conversation. The opinions are going to differ if it's high stakes. And what's the third one?
Strong emotions.
Strong emotions. So if I feel strongly and I think somebody else does, this might be a crucial conversation.
Correct.
If I know that I have to have or need to have a crucial conversation with someone, what am I supposed to do to prepare myself for that?
I'm glad you asked that. While I was teaching this over in DHS and Homeland Security, I'd often get students that come in and say, all right, you're going to teach me how to make people think like I do. And that's not what a crucial conversation is all about. A crucial conversation is, one, you're going to spend 70% of your time working on you first, to make sure you understand what it is that you want, what it is that you're trying to get out of this conversation. And if your only goal is, I got to win the conversation, then you're looking at this crucial conversation all wrong. So it's making sure you understand what it is that you want, how you want that relationship to go. One of the things the company always talks about, crucial learning, is that it is results through relationships. That's what they're trying to get you to understand, that I want to get our information. We'll get to this in a second when we talk about some of the other components of the theory, is all of our information into the pool of shared meaning. And that's just what it sounds like. If you use the analogy of one of those little kiddie pools and you got a faucet on each end of the pool and you want to make sure you fill it up with water, you know, if you turn the one on the right, turn it up, you know, it's putting in the water. But if you turn one on the left and it's just trickling in, well, that information is not getting in that pool. But you want everybody to be able to put all their information into the pool at the same time, not one faucet or the other being more forceful than the other faucet.
And I want people, even if I'm the person in charge, I want to get people's truth. And when we say the pool of shared meaning, if it's going to be shared, that means everybody's stuff has to get into it.
Correct.
And so if I want to get to the truth in my organization, I've got to be willing to hear everybody's truth, even if I don't like it, even if they come back and say, I'm not comfortable and I'm not sure we can get that, whatever that project is, done in that amount of time. I need to hear that. Everybody needs to hear that.
Absolutely. And they on the book is now currently on its third edition. One of the things that they added in there was that if I think I have to have a crucial conversation with Dave Howie, yes, it's my responsibility to get my information into the pool of shared meaning, but I need to also make sure I get your truth into the pool of shared meaning. So that's why I say it, 70% is working on me. All right, I feel like Dave's not safe. He doesn't feel like he can talk to me. What am I going to have to do to make Dave feel safe so he can put his information into the pool of shared meaning?
Lag time. Let's talk about lag time. Because, you know, we have all these different ways that people deal with conflict. You can accommodate, you can compete, and all of that, or you can avoid. That kind of gets tied to lag time. But tell me about, in this theory in crucial conversations, what lag time is and why is it important? Or why does it matter? Why is it relevant?
Lag time is that point between where you realize that there's an issue, boss telling you that it has to be done in this amount of time, to where you finally say something to the boss about it. That's that lag time. And the longer the lag time, and you just talked about, especially when we're talking about teams, you just mentioned that, if we are leaving a long lag time, the relationships in that team aren't good. We don't have a high-performing team. We've got a team that's in trouble because we have all that lag where there are unheard sentiments, there are hurt feelings, there are all kinds of other issues going on within that team because we're not telling each other what's going on.
Then at some point, it starts to become a morality play. It's a good guy, bad guy thing.
Yes.
It's not just, oh, yeah, you're right, I forgot to read that or send it. This becomes, I'm the one who's doing right, and that other person is the bad guy in the story.
That's one of the things that also the theory talks about is stories. And there's my stories, what I'm telling myself by what you did. Oh, Dave only sent that email because, you know, he's trying to be mean. And then there's your stories. Oh, Mike didn't read that email. He's trying to ignore me again. So that's where we have those stories. And there's three that the theory talks about: the victim, villain, and the helpless stories. And so, you know, and it is just what it sounds like, you know, victim. Everybody's just picking on me. What else can I do about it? Or the villain. Oh, man, the other person's always a villain. He's always trying to going after people, and he's always doing bad things. And then the helpless story. Hey, it's the organization. There's nothing I can do about it. I mean, that's all we can do.
Most of the time, the extreme versions of those things are at best exaggerated and at worst flat out untrue sometimes.
Correct.
You used this phrase earlier, and I want to talk a little bit more about it. What do I really want? And then what do others really want? What is the value of exploring that and talking about that? What do I want? And what does, in this case, you know, if it's two people, what does Mike want? How does that help us deal with the crucial conversation?
Again, we go back to what I mentioned earlier. We're spending most of the time working on ourselves. So part of that working on ourselves is asking that question. You know, what is it do I really want from this situation? What do I want for myself? Again, if it's just that I want to be right, then we need to examine what our real motives are within this organization. What do I want for others? If that relationship is important to me, hey, two old tankers getting together and sitting back talking about what we used to do on the back deck, then I'm gonna work on that. And then what do I want for that relationship? Again, it's looking at, all right, so we've been friends for this long. If I run roughshod over Dave, I mean, what's going to happen to that relationship right now? Are we going to be able to get together and talk about it? And then the last question that you have to ask yourself also is, all right, if I really believe that I'm doing this all for the right reasons, am I acting in a way that makes others see that I'm doing these for the right reasons and not because I just need to win?
And that takes a lot of self-reflection. As a matter of fact, that might be a difficult conversation to have with yourself, with that person in the mirror.
So true.
You know, I went to a store, and I can't remember all the details of it, but it had something to do with a rain check item, a sale, and I had paid a different price, and now it was, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but I went into the store bowed up to fight, to make my case, to get this item at a different price. And I walked in, is the manager here? Manager's over there. And I walk over and here's the manager. And I started kind of a long explanation of what had happened 2 weeks ago. And he stopped me and said, what do you want? What do you want me to do for you? I said, I want to get this item at that price. He said, let's go do it. And I thought, you know, why didn't I just start with that? And I thought I was trying to make a case for my own righteousness, I think is a way to say that. And he cut me off at the knees and said, just tell me what you want.
Kind of took the wind out of your sails, huh?
Well, it did, but it solved the problem and I felt good. And I just asked myself, why don't you just say that starting out? Sometimes we hide what we want. Do you see that? Why do we do that? Why do people do that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just like I've been mentioning all along here. There are times when we just want to be right. Especially with our spouses, you know, I can't let her be right. I mean, she's, or, you know, it's not that we want to be right, but we think our position, as Colin Powell used to say, is so tied to our ego that, you know, if my position goes, so goes my ego. Right. I mean, they're just different things that come into play. And yeah, I see it quite a bit. All right. Am I just wanting to win because I want my answer to be right? Or do I want what's best for the organization? And I'll have to admit, the whole reason I volunteered to be one of the instructors way back when to get certified to teach this stuff is because I really am bad at crucial conversation. You mentioned those different methods. I am one of those who avoid, oh, crap, I need to go talk to this person about it. I said, well, you know, Mike, I'm bad at it. Let me go learn about these skills. Let me see if it helps me in my life.
Yeah, my wife and I had to go and talk to somebody that, you know, we deal with regularly, and I didn't want to do it. And we it was a conversation that we had to have. We did do it, and I felt a lot better afterwards. And we did it the right way, I think, because I listed out the specific topics I wanted to bring up, and then she and I talked about what we wanted to say about each topic. So we don't want to attack, you know, we don't want to make assumptions. So let's try to be as factual and unemotional about it.
You're actually doing some of the things that we talk about in crucial conversations. One, you're getting your story straight. All right, what is understanding our story? You just talked about, you know, we send an email and I make up a story, you make up a story. But one of the techniques that the class talks about a lot, and in fact, if you take the course, it's a 2-day course, first full day, right, it's all about you. Remember I said 70% is spent on you first full day, and the first class on the second day is all about working on yourself. And you spend at least two of those lessons talking about master my stories. All right, what is it I'm telling myself? What are those facts? That's what you're talking about. What are our assumptions? Doesn't it sound like problem solving in the Army?
Yes, it does.
And what is it that I really want? So you did a lot of the same things. And then even listing out those things on the sheet, again, is something that the class talks about a lot. Don't come in there with a script, because if they say something that you weren't ready for, it throws off your whole script. But writing down at least your main points that you want to at least cover is a great technique to also do.
And we found that in the course of that conversation, it was 3 hours long, we heard things from the other party that we did not know. It helped us understand why certain things had happened. and it was very helpful. I heard a quote, and I can't remember exactly where I heard this, but it was, a conversation will not rise above the emotional maturity level of the first 3 minutes. So in other words, if we start off with you didn't answer the thing or finger pointing, it's going to go downhill from there.
Absolutely. And it's similar to something that we teach in the intermediate course. We talk about the three-part I message. We start with I am, and you give your feeling.
Right.
And then you talk about what the facts, what you observed of this other person, and then give them the results of it. And you're like, hey, well, here's the consequences. I feel like you're not treating me as an equal member of the team, or whatever the consequence may be. And we teach that similarly in crucial conversations as well, is that here's the facts. Here's what I saw from you. This is exactly what happened. And here are the consequences. Usually they can't argue with the facts, unless you talk to a teenager, but usually they can't argue with the facts, and they can't argue with your feelings because they're your feelings. Hey, you really disappointed me, or, you know, I'm hurt, or, you know, whatever it is, they can't argue with it. It's your feelings. I can't tell you how to feel. But then once they understand that it's not a direct attack against them.
Right.
They can start to process it a little better.
One thing I've found is when I share the feeling, the emotional intelligence aspect, I get that back from other people. And so they'll say, well, you know what? I'm frustrated because we've been talking about this for 6 months and we haven't gotten any movement on it.
Absolutely.
And then they say they're frustrated. And I say, I'm disappointed. And then somewhere in the middle of all that, we can come up with a solution that both deals with the problem and repairs the relationship.
Yes.
So crucial conversations is not just about just solving the problem, the content. It's also about salvaging or repairing or maintaining relationships.
Yep. As I said earlier, one of the things that I haven't heard them saying quite lately, but their tagline used to be results through relationships. And in fact, when I first went through the course, the instructor says, this is not a communications course. This is a results course. If you want to get results in your organization, this is the way to go through them.
Any set of facts can be used to tell a number of stories. So tell me a little bit about that, what that means.
And it's just what we've been talking about, because people can look at, and it's, again, telling our stories. And one of the things we talk about in the intermediate course is that ladder of inference. You see a set of facts. Everybody sees the same set of facts. But based on our experiences, our education, what we've lived through, we apply different meanings to those facts. Even though everybody's seeing the same thing, but we just apply different meanings to it. We try to separate our stories. All right. Am I telling myself a story here when I read this fact, or is this actually a fact? And that's actually one of the more, like I said, we talk about doing master my stories twice within the organization, but it comes into play when we talk about critical thinking, we talk about decision making, we talk about problem solving. One, understand your stories, right? And where they come from. Why am I saying this? This is the fact that I saw. I saw Dave pick up the pencil. That's the fact. I saw it. I could observe it. I could see it. If someone else was in the room with us, did they see the same thing? All right. Now, what is the story that I'm telling myself about that? Well, he needs to write something. Well, maybe the pencil was in his way, or maybe he just doesn't like that pencil and want to put it somewhere else. We don't know what the story is. We don't understand because we don't know what's in your mind, what you are thinking, why you picked up that pencil. That's why they made that phrase in there, that any set of facts can be told in many different ways. It's making sure we get all of our understanding into the pool of shared meaning, that we understand, oh, wait a minute. So Dave says he picked up the pencil because he needed to do a report. He wasn't trying to just take the pencil away from me as I was thinking.
Yeah, or he picked up the pencil because he was going to give me a no-go after 3 minutes. And then you go back and say, were you going to give me a no-go? No, I was, as a matter of fact, you were doing really well. I was going to give you a go. But then we're off to the races. The longer that goes where there's that conflict, the worse it gets.
Yes.
Then it becomes villain.
Victim, villain, and helpless stories.
And we say things to ourselves like, you know, he didn't even bother to. And when we say things like that,
yes,
that's obviously is an attempt to somehow discredit that other party. They didn't have the courtesy to, or, you know, the least they could have done was this. Are there other things maybe that I can think about if I'm going to prepare for a crucial conversation? What other things should I do in preparation for one?
Again, most of it's working on yourself, but then now you have to also work on how are you going to get the information out of the other person. So I'm talking to Dave about why he picked up the pencil, but I'm looking at you and I can see that you don't feel very comfortable talking to me about that pencil. I don't know why Mike's coming over here to talk to me about this stupid pencil. So now I have to think about, okay, so what can I do to help you feel safe and add to the conversation? So those are things you really need to work on. And again, another one of the things we teach in the intermediate course, Core Strengths, SDI, talks about listening to the words that you are using so I understand what your perspective is. If you're talking to me about personnel, performance, or even process, then I need to talk to you in that language. Crucial conversations is similar in that, in like, listen to what you're saying, use those words back to you. They have a skill that they talk about called AMP. Ask, mirror, paraphrase, or prod, and get you to put your information into the pool. So one, making sure I'm making everything safe for you to be able to add your information in. So that's another thing that you can do while trying to prepare for a crucial conversation.
I'll tell you, if you talk to some of my former intermediate course colleagues, they'll tell you about a time when we had a crucial conversation and I was leading it. I set it up. And it failed. They'll tell you, talk to Rich Kuhn or some of those other folks.
Okay.
Because I stormed out of the meeting and it did not go well.
Wow.
And I just picked my stuff up and walked out. I think it was because there were high emotions. It was a curriculum matter. You know what that's like.
Oh, yes.
You get faculty talking about curriculum. It is crucial because emotions are high.
Yes.
It's high stakes for people.
Yes.
And people have different opinions. I know that I didn't handle that episode well. I was really upset with myself for several months after that. But that was a crucial conversation. I started it off kind of dictatorially, like, we need to stop doing this. And it didn't go well. Folks out there in our audience that are intermediate course graduates, maybe you'll remember some of these theories and hear how they tie back into what we've talked about.
I mentioned earlier about the ladder of inference, where we took from Peter Senge's book about fifth discipline. He talks about that ladder of inference where we see the data and then we shoot up the ladder to actions. And Crucial Conversations actually talks about it in a similar way. They don't have the same shooting up the ladder as a see, feel, think, act model that they use, but it's very similar. It's the same premise that, hey, you're going to see something, you're going to tell yourself a story about it, and then you're going to act on it. But then we try to get ourselves to short circuit that quick move up there and try to figure out what's going on. We talk about membership, being a part of a group, being part of the team in the intermediate course, getting that information, that pool of shared meaning, that shared understanding. Talk about even mission command, that shared understanding that everybody understands what's going on, what's happening, what's going on with the group and how we can do better. That way, if boss has given us a task, but the conditions aren't the way the boss had to come out, I can still make a decision to get to the end state that he or she directed. Talk about conflict management resolution. Again, the Crucial Conversations uses some techniques. Start with heart. What is it that I really want from this discussion? I mean, am I trying to be a bully and override you? Or I really want what's best for the organization. Talk about active listening. That's another piece that is really big on there. I mentioned the AMP skills that are a big piece of that. So the person's not willing to come forth. And if you're asking, mirroring, or paraphrasing, you have to actively listen to be able to understand, all right, I think I heard you say this, and really get that back. I like how the Army just recently changed the counseling manual. It's now providing feedback instead of just counseling. Crucial Conversations is all about feedback. It's like, hey, let's keep talking. And I know in our FIRO discussions, Fundamental Interpersonal Relationship Organizations, Will Schutz talks about, hey, if the organization runs into problems, the thing that we need to do is stop the work, go talk about it until we get it resolved, and then get back to the work. And then the last thing I'll talk about, I mentioned also as well, is this effective decision making. You know, we talk about that in the first week of the intermediate course, decision making. Even though this is a course about communication, about dialogue, it's getting you to do those things that help you with critical thinking. It's trying to get you to do those things to help you with those decision making problems. It's trying to get you to do some of those same skills that you need
And in the intermediate course and in the advanced course also, we do the SDI that you've talked about. There are different challenges. Someone's blue, someone's blue-green,
yep,
red-blue, hubs. There's a challenge, a different challenge for each person, each person's MVS or conflict sequence.
Right.
Is that, do you agree with that?
Oh yes, very true. Yes. And then again, I go back to what I talked about earlier is you hear that in their discussion. You hear them talking about Dave's a red and he's all about, you know, performance. He get it done. You know, hey, let's start the work. And you can hear that in that individual. And he's like, if I walk up to you and start talking about, hey, but we're not taking care of our people, your orientation is toward getting something done. So I need to talk with you about that first before I can get you back into the conversation so I can get to at least talking about the people like I want to.
If we learn how to listen to people, like you're saying, the language that people use or the specific words, they will tell us what's matter. We have to listen, but they will be telling us and we will hear what matters to them if we learn how to listen to the other person's heart also.
And if we're really listening and we know, and we're worried about that relationship and we understand, something's happening. Their language just changed. They're no longer focused on performance. All of a sudden they're starting to analyze data. There's something they're going down their conflict sequence. Okay, let me see if I can halt them going further into their conflict sequence. Let me try to get them back to their happy place there.
When we taught the basic course face-to-face a couple of years ago, we used to have something called the feedback party. And I think some seminars will still do that. And it's take a card, write out an iMessage for somebody in the room, and go give it to say it to them. And they would always say, are y'all included in that? And we'd say, yes, if you got feedback from me, give it to me. And I had a student come up to me. This was a week later. This an incident happened on Thursday, and we did this on the following Tuesday. And the student came up to me with their card, and it was last week when we were having this discussion and I asked a question, you were answering it, and you used the word stupid in your answer, and I felt insulted and degraded. And I was crushed and I thought back and I said, yeah, I think I did do that. I started to do what we tell students not to do, which is you don't get it. I'm an instructor. That wasn't what I meant to do. And then as soon as I had that teed up in my mind, I said, that's not what we teach to respond to feedback. And so I paraphrased it and I said, so what you're saying to me is you felt this way when I said that. And the student said, yes. And I said, thank you for telling me that. And that's a crucial conversation, is
yes.
It not?
It is. And I think you handled it correctly as well in that you didn't say what was in your brain because the story that you told yourself was, I'm an instructor. I know better. They just don't understand. Instead of, thank you for the feedback.
Right. And that's it's easy for you and me to sit here and say in the studio in a calm, sterile environment. But when the feelings are going,
absolutely,
and the stakes are high, it's a lot harder to say that.
Yes. Like I said, the whole reason I volunteered to teach the class was because Mike doesn't handle confrontation in that manner that well. So I had to figure out how can I get better at it. And here's another thing that I really love about crucial conversations. While it was intended for results at work, it's something that you can use in other places. You can use it at church. You can use it at your volunteer organizations. You can use it at school. You can use it at home. My wife has heard when I was first learning the material, I use a CD and listen to the book, and she'd hear it and she'd ask me questions about it. She said, oh yeah, so this learn to look thing, how do you do that? So she was able to hear it as well. But you can use that this type of material in many different locations, in many different aspects.
That's one of the things that I love about a good theory is that it's common sense. And when we present it to the students, they say, yeah, that makes perfect sense. I've always kind of felt that way, but now you've given me a theory to connect it to. What is it, normalizing? Is that the right word for that? Is it where we say it's okay that you have these feelings? It's okay that you, and then people will say, well, I don't like that. I don't want to go tell somebody all this stuff. I still do some coaching in one of our courses, And I can hear people and they'll say, I know I need to do this or that. And so you're always going to have that little voice on your shoulder saying, nope, don't do it. It's going to be painful. You're not going to like it. You're going to have to say stuff you don't want to say and hear stuff you don't want to hear. Is that a good, healthy thing to tell ourselves? Is that we will always have the reluctance or feel the reluctance. I'm reluctant to share my feelings, or I'm reluctant to let go of the task. Like, no, we're going to get this thing done this week.
Right.
And I don't care how everybody feels about it. There's always it's the human side of us that pulls us back and says, don't do that. Don't engage in that.
Because we either don't want to hurt someone else's feelings. We don't want to feel bad. You know, well, I'm being a bad guy if I come over here and talk to you about this issue, or we're just saying, well, it'll blow over. And that's another one of the companies saying is, you know, crucial conversations. We either don't have the conversation or we don't do it well. And then it really blows up in our face later on.
And I'll tell you that I am in SDI. I'm blue green. That's my MVS. And so, excellent. We got more kindred spirit. And so, for a blue green, for me, I'll tell you, it's the blue part is I don't want to damage this relationship, or I don't want to tell somebody something that I kind of think they might not want to hear. The green part is I don't want to say stuff if I don't know that it's factually true. Like, I will go back and check months old emails, say, now, did I send that out? And I'll go back and do all that kind of research. So I get bogged down in the, first of all, am I right? Am I correct? And
yes.
Second of all, am I going to say something to hurt people's feeling? That's kind of the trouble that I have with this, with going through this process.
Very similar. Is it enough to rock the boat if I say something to this person, or is it that important, am I going to ruffle some feathers, or is this going to really make us better, or can I just let it go? Yeah, I'm the same way. I'll go back and like, did I really send that email out?
Right.
When did I give them enough time to look at it?
And my conflict sequence is green, blue, red. I am prone to having a long lag time. And I can see how that can be very unhelpful in a situation. And then blue, just whatever you want to do to make the conflict go away, I'm okay with it. What you said earlier is so true. For me, I find if I can identify what I really want, and if I share it with another person early in the conflict, it can help. And I find if I let it go to stage three, to that red, because I'm not saying what I really want. I'm trying to think, or I'm trying to make everybody else happy. And then finally, I get to that, what do you really want? And it comes out very immaturely. Is there anything else about this topic that I haven't asked you about?
There's a couple of things I really want to mention. And again, just like I talked about, people would come to the class and they say, all right, you're going to teach me how to make them see things my way. I'm like, no, this is not that. The other piece of that it's not a panacea either. It's not going to get you exactly what you want either. I've had students who've come to the class and they've come back to tell me, says, hey, I tried to have a crucial conversation with my supervisor, and she's, nope, this is not a crucial conversation. I don't want to hear it. And then there are others who told a story. Well, you know, hey, I finally heard, or we finally got everything into the pool. I still didn't get the answer I want. So I'm moving to another position. So at least now the air is clear and the relationship could get better, but it's not going to get you exactly what you want if that's what you're going to the class and assuming that it's going to teach you. And the last thing is I just mentioned it about crucial learning being purchased by Core Strengths. And I can't wait to see how they meld those two instruments together, that with the SDI, with the crucial conversations, and how that's going to come out. I'm just so curious as how that's going to develop.
And the other thing I think the coaching point might be, because I've seen this, especially in class, is that it's not over. So I may have a crucial conversation with you about something. 3 months later, we may have a similar conversation. like you said, it's not a panacea. It doesn't end the issues forever, because a person has a tendency to slouch back into not doing the things right. they're supposed to. And when that happens, we have to be called out.
And that's the second portion. The crucial learning folks actually have two classes that are they use the crucial conversations. There's crucial conversations for mastering dialogue. That's what the current course is. Before, it was just crucial conversations. And then they have crucial conversations for accountability. That piece is what a lot of people told them when they first introduced the course material to them. It says, hey, while I'm getting the discussion going, how do I hold this person accountable? So they came up with that second piece, the crucial conversations for accountability, to get people to say, all right, so that was the main thing we taught while I was part of USCIS for the supervisors. So we get, they split it up. We'd have employees in one class. Usually it was crucial conversations for mastering dialogue. And sometimes we do that class for the supervisors as well. And then we do crucial accountability back then. Now it's crucial conversations for accountability for the supervisors. That accountability piece is what they were wanting mostly. How do I get you to do what we agreed to, more so than just to being able to talk to their employees?
And so, Mr. Mike Edwards, I really want to thank you for coming down and being a guest on Leader Up and talking about this topic. Because this book has come highly recommended by General Beagle talks about it. General Doyle, who was on our podcast recently, talked about it. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed talking to you and finding out we have a lot of commonalities. And this is the longest we've kind of known each other, but this is kind of the longest that we've talked. And I really appreciate this topic and the fact that you took the time to explore it and get certified in it.
Well, I love the topic. I love the crucial conversations. It's a great experience with it. And again, thank you for asking me to come talk about it. I love to talk about it.
And so, Leader Up audience out there, think to yourself, is there a crucial conversation that you need to have? Is there somebody in your life, work, that you need to go and talk to about a topic that's kind of been bugging you for a while? And if you do, don't let fear get in the way of that. Go ahead and have it. We find that when we do open up and talk openly about things, that we feel better and our relationships improve. We feel closer to people and we hear things from people that we didn't know. And we hear a little bit more of their story. And it helps so much to understand where someone has been in their life and kind of what is driving them where they are now. Make sure to subscribe to our Facebook page and join us again next time for another episode of Leader Up.
As always, if you have any questions or feedback or would like to learn more about our podcast, please check the description for our email and for our website. Thanks for listening.